Welcome to the Morning Upgrade Podcast with Ryan Cote, where we feature casual conversations with entrepreneurs about personal development and growth.
Hey, Scott. Welcome to the Morning Upgrade Podcast. How are you?
I'm terrific, Ryan. Thank you for having me.
So why don't we start off by you telling everyone who you are, what you do, and what your interests are.
My name is Scott Daly. I am the Vice President of Marketing and Sales for a mid-market mechanical cable manufacturer located in North Jersey, town of Riverdale. And I spearhead the company's marketing and sales communications initiatives.
Excellent. What are your interests?
The hustle comes to mind right away. I love getting people to say yes. I love putting marketing messaging in front of people that persuades them to take the actions I seek from them. And on the more personal side, I love being a dad and ideally traveling the world whenever we're allowed to resume doing it.
That's a big thing for me too, travel. Like when I get back to normal, but it's nice to see different parts of the world, meet different people and just see different cultures. So definitely on the same page with you there. I've known Scott for a couple of years now because Saba, they are a client of Ballantyne. So I've had the pleasure of working with Scott for the last couple of years. I liked your answer about the hustle and getting people to say yes, because I know you're half of your job at least is sales, and that's same with me. So similar interest there.
Yeah.
Scott, let's talk about your morning routine. What does that look like? I know you've got a very long commute too, which it kind of ironically dovetails into personal development too, in terms of like a commute in a classroom in your commute. But what does your morning routine look like? What can you share with us?
Sure. I'm pretty spring loaded. So I have an 80-mile commute. So you got to take that seriously just in terms of staying alert on such a long drive. So
yeah.
I pretty ritualistically go to bed at a reasonable hour. I actually like to shut the world. It's funny you call it a morning ritual. I actually will turn my phone off 1 hour before I plan to go to bed so I could slow my brain down, so I could stop thinking about the things that keep me passionate all day long. And perhaps this is true of others in the marketing and sales arena, but I constantly think about how to please customers. So it's always on my mind. So I have learned the hard way, like most things are taught, to turn off my phone and shut out the world about 60 minutes before I want to close my eyes so that I have uninterrupted sleep. Otherwise, I'll be busy trying to solve the world's problems with one eye open while I'm laying in my bed. Same is true in the morning. When I wake up in the morning, I'm pretty spring-loaded. I pop right up, and 15 minutes from the moment I wake up, I'm out the door, meaning I do everything the night before. And I try to get in about 90 minutes early to the office so that I can read. So I don't have a ritual where I run in the morning or things like that. I don't really have the time. I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm at the office by 6:30. And that's about 90 minutes before anybody starts showing up here, somewhere between an hour and 90 minutes. And I read. I actually read up on the things I don't know well enough, like marketing trends and sales trends. Maybe it's tools that are falling into fashion or out of fashion. Maybe it's just behavior that I can learn, new behaviors that a demand generation buyer are beginning to exhibit that maybe 5-10 years ago they were not exhibiting. So I scour the internet for reputable sources of information on how my buyers want to hear from me and how they want me to talk to them, so that when that clock strikes, 8:39, and I'm ready to go ahead and try to find them, whether it's through a passive digital campaign or literally knocking on a door, I'm equipped with the latest, greatest information on how best to persuade them.
So it sounds like your morning routine almost starts at the office with the self-education and the reading, unless you listen to things in the car too. What do you do in the long commute?
Usually I listen to talk radio, although very recently I haven't done nearly enough audiobooks as I could. And very recently I've decided to go back to it. I have done that a little bit, but more recently decided I'm going to go back to it because it is an enormous amount of time. And I usually listen to talk radio. It's not usually pretty light stuff, because once I'm at my desk, I'm pretty heady. And so I think of that drive as sort of a reprieve, sort of a break from how busy my mind gets while I'm at my desk. But more recently, I have consumed back to some reading.
I see what you mean there. I guess if you've got a long commute, and if it was all business in the car, then when you got into the office, it's all business, of course. It might be too much. Maybe there's a happy medium, like half of the time is an audible book and then half the time is the talk radio, where you kind of let your mind rest. I see what you're saying there.
Yeah.
There needs to be some elements of rest for sure. But in terms of like marketing and sales, because I do have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast. Any books you could recommend with marketing and sales?
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, the Bible is How to Win Friends by Dale Carnegie. It probably seems a bit trite to say that, right? Like I'm reaching for the lowest hanging fruit, but there's a reason that I am reaching for the lowest hanging fruit, because it really is a brilliant read about how to get things out of your buyer. There's so many incredible stories in that book, but that one comes to mind. Neil Rackham's Spin Selling is a data-based argument on how to sell, both in large sales and, or in other words, large consultative sales like you might sell, or physical sales like me, I'm in a manufacturing category, or even small sales. But Spin Selling, which is an acronym, does a beautiful job of explaining to you with data what gets you closer to yeses. And another book that I've really grown fond of is Selling the Invisible. That book is terrific because it literally speaks to selling something that's amorphous and intangible. And because so much of what we do outside the actual ultimate yes is selling concepts and themes and even part of your personality, which is entirely invisible, I found that book instrumental in helping me deliver the stagecraft component to any pitch.
I love how strategic you are with the books that you read and the takeaways, the lessons that you're taking away from each book and the way you set up your day. Let's stay on the topic of business right now. So let's pivot to challenges though. What challenges have you had to get? Maybe there's one that pops to the top of the front of your mind. What is one challenge you've had to get through in business and how have you done it?
Many years ago, it's been some time, but I see the problem, how it manifested in me first many, many years ago. As I said a moment ago, we generally don't learn anything until we're painted into a corner and we're forced to learn. That's usually adversity is, that's sort of the place from which we all grow. Many, many years ago, when I was still a greenhorn selling anything or marketing anything, I didn't perceive myself as an expert or a specialist at all. I didn't think of communications as a specialty, not because it isn't one, but because I didn't perceive myself as possessing a specialization. I thought if you have a mouth, then you can communicate. If you can communicate, well, then you know how to do sales or marketing. Same way that if you have a cell phone and Instagram account, you think of yourself as Ansel Adams. You think of yourself as somebody who can take beautiful photographs of Yosemite and call yourself a photographer. Photographers would probably take issue with that, however. So similarly, when I was young, I didn't think I had an expertise, so I'd never obligated myself to learn one because I thought that by virtue of speaking, I possessed that expertise. And it wasn't until many years later and many screw-ups later and many no's and many doors slamming on my face and many embarrassments that I realized that marketing, communications, sales, communications, all under the communications umbrella, and it is an expertise. And now that I am sort of a time-tested, I'm a pretty proven leader in my category, I'm humbly proud to say, I will say that the challenge that I face, to answer your question, is helping people around me who are in my periphery support my goals, helping them realize that they actually can be contributors, that they're not just punchers of time clocks, that they actually have the rare skills to build upon, to become extraordinary communicators of messaging and information. And so the challenge I find is not necessarily finding talent, but helping that talent realize that their moment is now, that the moment they've been waiting for to shine is sitting underneath their chins and they just didn't know it because they never really fancied themselves particularly groundbreaking on their own. They never perceived themselves as true change agents or force multipliers. So I think my challenge today and day to day is helping the people around me realize that they actually can be extraordinary, be of extraordinary help, if only they perceive themselves as experts.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're touching on leadership and how hard it is to lead people and motivate people, especially because, like you mentioned, another thing you mentioned that you touched upon was the imposter syndrome, like feeling like you don't know enough, you're not good enough. Self-limiting beliefs. We all have that. We have that ourselves. And then the people you're trying to lead have it to a degree as well. And so, yeah, that just all that combined adds to the complexity of leadership motivating others. I think leadership now is such an important skill and it's like crucial now. And it's only going to get better, more important.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't want to belabor the point, but not even that long ago, I'd say maybe 5-10 years ago, I made the mistake of answering the question you just asked by saying finding talent. That's very, very hard. That's my big challenge, finding talent. I've revised that to not finding talent, but helping that talent realize their potential, because sometimes we don't think that we're due it. We're due our own potential. We think, you know, we're just a doer. We're just sort of a doer of tasks. And there's this concept known as self-perception theory, which in broader strokes suggests, dictates that the thing you perceive yourself as being every day is what you become every day. Pretty simple. And so I've grown fond of revising what my biggest challenge is from saying finding talent to helping talent realize that they are talent.
Makes total sense. Any strategies, any one or two strategies that you've used to make that a reality for the people that you manage?
I'm a big storyteller. That's probably just lends to the career choice I've made many years ago. But I believe that, you know, I use analogies and metaphors a lot to help people see the things they're not seeing. So I generally like to tell people what I believe they're not seeing about themselves so that they can change what they see in the mirror. And, you know, and again, I don't want to get sappy or over saccharine about any of this or too bleeding heart about it, but I've seen way too many times people perceive themselves as possessing jobs. They have a job. They don't have a career. They don't have a purpose. There is no mission in their day-to-day. It's just a job. So what I like to do is point out to them, what would they do if they had a career? Tell me what a career would look like to you. And they end up describing the thing that they themselves are in the way of. It's fascinating to me how many times when you ask someone to describe a career, they're describing the things that they actually have the power to do every day, but they don't perceive themselves as having the power to do. So I like to ask people, what would you like to be when you grow up? I don't care if you're 60 or you're 16. When they describe it, then you can describe to them the tasks they're in charge of every day that actually would lend to that career ambition of theirs. So introspection, I don't know if that's necessarily a tactic or a strategy, but I do like to ask people, what would be a perfect day for you? What's a great 8-hour day? What did it comprise? What did it involve? Sure enough, the things they think a great 8-hour day comprises were right in their path.
I think the answer here is you're asking them thought-provoking questions that get them to think and to clarify. I think that's the answer right there, right?
It's amazing to me how motivated people are if you remind them how special they are. It's amazing to me how people just spring up and they even straighten their spines a little in their chair when you tell them how special they're capable of being. It's like, it's almost like they forgot, you know? I mean, I guess if you come in every day and you sit at your cubicle, sure, you could lose sight of it. But Ryan, I mean, like, I came from absolutely nothing. So I had to either figure, I mean, literally nothing. So I had to figure out whether or not I had a skill or, you know, an ability to contribute to this world around me. So perhaps it has made me a leader that is keenly sensitive to people who may perceive themselves as just doers of tasks. So yes, I think I do ask them to look inward. And I'm always amazed at how inspired people can become just by asking them to take a little bit deeper look at what they're contributing and how actually important their contributions are.
Yeah, that's great insight. I've got one more question for you, Scott, and we'll wrap up with you telling everyone how they can learn more about you,
sure,
more about Saba, share some websites with us, whatever you want. My last question for you is, what is your definition and or approach to happiness?
I consider myself very fortunate. I'm pretty humble about how fortunate I am that I wake up and do what I love doing every day. Because I know how scarcely found that is in someone's day-to-day life. So I consider myself extraordinarily fortunate to enjoy what I do every day. Happiness, it's funny, you know, I recently turned 50 and it didn't come without its revelations. I would say that, you know, if you want to be happy, answer to you, set an extraordinarily high standard for your output and then chase that, even if you fall short of it every day, be in pursuit of it and please yourself. Make sure that you are happy because time, it's fleeting, and wasting your time trying to please other people or meet other people's standards, I have learned in 50 years of living, is a complete and utter waste of time.
Your first answer made me think of a book I'm reading right now called The Four Agreements to Personal Freedom. Mm-hmm. And one of the agreements you have to make with yourself is always do your best. Yeah. Is that your first answer resonated with that? Made me think of that. So, well, thanks for sharing, Scott. This was great. This conversation flew by. What's the best way someone can connect with you or learn more about you? Where should they go?
Yeah, I'm pretty easily found if you Google Scott Daly. You can find me on LinkedIn using Scott Daly or Scott Patrick Daly. I've grown to use both over the years. I'm very easily found on the internet because I've been doing marketing for so long. So it's not hard to find something that I've said or published. My company is SavaCable.com, not particularly related to this topic, but you can find me on LinkedIn. Probably the best and fastest way to find me.
Well, thanks, Scott. Thanks for your time. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Morning Upgrade Podcast. Please subscribe and review. And don't forget to visit us at morningupgrade.com for more content.